Eastern Time for our one-of-a-kind reporting and analysis on this critical election.
Millions of eligible voters in America never make it to the polls or even register to vote. When you don't vote, you're letting other people make decisions for you and pick the things your taxes will pay for. Voting is more than a civic duty. It gives you a voice about the priorities and the future of your community and our nation. Voting gives you a seat at the table.
That's right. By the way, that's from a video, and if you're watching the video, you see somebody wheeling a grocery cart through a store, and all these people are putting items in the grocery cart for them because they didn't vote and someone else is making all their decisions. So think about that analogy if you're thinking about not voting. The time is now. The time is also 6 o'clock, and you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, broadcasting at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the Internet to the entire world at WUSB.FM. As mentioned, 6 o'clock Tuesday night, time for Off the Wall. Okay, I know there are a lot of people out there that complain that our theme actually is almost as long as the show. So we're going to be making them happy this week because we're cutting in early, extra early, because we have so much to talk about. The number one item on this week before Election Day is something that a lot of us were anticipating, and that was Donald Trump's Madison Square Garden rally. You might have heard about it. You might have heard about some of the outrageous things that were said there, horribly offensive towards numbers of people. But A number of cable news networks have refused to play some of the remarks because they're so offensive. We hear it off the wall, though, feel it's necessary to hear at least some of this. And I only hope we got all the cuss words out. But you might have heard of this this so-called comedian. By the way, hi, Kyle.
Who?
You.
What?
You're Kyle. I'm Emmanuel. We didn't even introduce ourselves. Have 1 week left before Election Day. Again, go out there and vote. It's too late to register if you haven't registered already. But voting is so, so very important. But this guy, Tony Hinchcliffe is his name. Never heard of him before. Claims to be a comedian. Maybe he is. I don't know. But clearly a comedian that is all in for Trump and basically parrots a lot of his talking points. And, of course, was vetted, approved to speak at this rally. So let's hear a little bit more. Many of us have probably heard the horrible things he said about Puerto Rico, but that wasn't all of it. There was more. Let's listen. I'm sorry, we played the wrong thing there. This is that so-called comedian.
It's wild. And these Latinos, they love making babies, too. Just know that. They do. They do. There's no pulling out. They don't do that. They come inside, just like they did to our country. Republicans are the party with a good sense of humor. Free speech is under attack, people. I host a show, and each week I get updates what words we're allowed to use and not use anymore. It's happening right now the past few years. It's a real thing. And, you know, used to be able to tell people to Google stuff. My mom's a boomer in the state of Ohio, and there's no convincing her of anything. She's eating the cats. She's eating the dogs. They're eating the pets up there. It is absolutely wild times. It really, really is. And, you know, there's a lot going on. Like, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's literally a floating island of garbage in the middle of the ocean right now. Yeah. I think it's called Puerto Rico. Okay. All right. Okay. We're getting there. Again, normally I don't follow the national anthem, everybody. This isn't exactly a perfect comedy setup. There's some people here. All right. Very good. I like it. I have other policies that I think should be implemented as well. Like me personally, I think football should be all year round. Yeah. So many great athletes. I don't know about you guys, but I think that Travis Kelce might be the next O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, the crowd liked that one. They liked all of it,
feels
actually.
Feels good in here.
Yeah, it feels real good for somebody who says things like, well, I don't know what that even means. Is he saying that Travis Kelce is going to murder Taylor Swift at some point? It's sickening. It really is to hear all the hatred, all the vitriol just being spewed out there. I mean, what did we expect? You know, people were comparing it to the 1939 Nazi rally that took place in Madison Square Garden, and for the record, Madison Square Garden was different then. It was on 49th Street. But basically, the idea is the same. Get a bunch of people together to spew hatred. You know, the Republicans are so funny because you hear them getting all bent out of shape over the comparison to a Nazi rally. In fact, you'll even hear this in the clip we play next. Why is there a parallel being drawn between these two events? You know, they raise other points. They say, look, Eisenhower spoke at Madison Square Garden. All these presidents spoke at Madison Square Garden. They weren't called Nazi rallies. Yeah, there's a big difference because it's not about somebody running for president, not about somebody who is president. It's about what is being said. It's about what you are bringing to the people. And with the Trump campaign, it has always been about hatred and generalizing and making people afraid, much like what happened in 1939. They don't get this. They don't seem to see the similarities between the message then and the message now. All right, so it's not about a presidential address. No, it's not about that. It's not about the venue. It's about the message of hatred being brought to a particular place and just seeing when that has happened before. And they did not disappoint. They did not disappoint at all. My God. You know, I thought the gathering alone just would be kind of disturbing. But when they started opening their mouths, now this went on for 6 hours. 6 hours. And you have to go back to the beginning to see the people that they're trying to distance themselves from. Yeah, they're even trying to do that now, even though they approved everything that was being said and the people that showed up and the basic ideas and spirit of the place. Even after all of that, they are now saying, yeah, you know, it doesn't reflect our views. Sure it does. It absolutely reflects what you guys have been saying for years. Now, this guy, we're going to play a little clip from this. And we're not going to do very much of this because it's, you know, we have other things to say. His name is Sid Rosenberg. He's a conservative radio host. He once called Doug Emhoff, who's Kamala Harris's Jewish husband, he called him a crappy Jew and lashed out at Hillary Clinton for comparing the event to a Nazi rally. And in doing so, he declared that Democrats were bad people and made a point that he was talking about every Democrat in the country. Well, let's let him say it in his own unique way.
I get back and they go, Sid, you want to speak at this MSG thing? I go, sure. Out of character for me to speak at a Nazi rally. I was just in Israel, but I took the gig. She is some sick bastard, that Hillary Clinton, huh? What a sick son of a bitch. The whole fucking party, a bunch of degenerates, lowlives, Jew haters and lowlives. Every one of them. Every one of them. Look at my city. Look at my city. Yes, this building is beautiful. You're all beautiful. Look at you. But you can't walk outside past about 10 o'clock at night here. If you're a pretty woman, like my beautiful wife Danielle out there somewhere, you get punched across the face just for walking down the street. Who did that? Bill de Blasio, Eric Adams, Democrat mayors. Andrew Cuomo, Kathy Hochul, Democrat governor. You got homeless and veterans, Americans sleeping on their own feces on a bench in Central Park. But the fucking illegals, they get whatever they want, don't they? Five-star hotels, cash, probably get Yankee Dodger tickets tomorrow night.
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know, Kyle. This is disturbing. I expected it to be disturbing. It's beyond what I expected. But I wonder if this might have opened up some eyes. It might have gotten people to realize, wow, these are the monsters that we will be unleashing on America if we vote them in. I don't see why the Trump campaign doesn't see this themselves. They are incapable of seeing how ugly they appear and how hateful they are. They believe everything they say. This is who they are, and they expect others to embrace that. And unfortunately, many, many people do. It's estimated 80 million people will vote for this. And, you know, something that really, really has been bugging me lately is the propensity of the word illegals being used to describe human beings. And, you know, I ask people, when you hear that, when you hear somebody going on and on about the illegals doing this, the illegals doing that, replace that word with the word Jews. And then read the whole thing back. How does that sound? How does that sound to demean somebody, to demean a human being, to make them into something evil, to say they're all the same, to say they're polluting our blood, to say that they want to rape your wife and kill your children and destroy your neighborhood? These are human beings. And there is no crime that I'm aware of where somebody who is a killer, somebody who is a burglar, a rapist, you name the crime, you don't refer to the person as an illegal. They've committed a crime. Why aren't they illegal? Why is it only people who have crossed a line without filling out some kind of a form and are someplace that they technically aren't supposed to be? Why are they dehumanized? Do we really believe these people are not like us? I'll tell you who's not like us. The people who say that. Because they seem to have left behind every definition of what humanity is. They've rejected that. And they want to refer to people as illegals so that you hate them, so that you fear them, so that you don't see them as human beings. Now, the issue of undocumented aliens or illegal immigration, whatever you want to call it, it's an issue, absolutely. But it's not the issue that should have you thinking that you're about to be attacked, that your house is about to be burned down, that all these horrible things that they put into your head, that is going to happen. More likely, you are interacting with people who are undocumented every single day, and they are making your life better. They're cutting your grass. They're serving your food. They're cooking your food. They're doing things that the rest of us don't want to do because they're being paid much, much less and being treated like garbage just because of those jobs, let alone their immigration status. We would be better off having people in this country legally so that they can prosper, so that they can work hard, so they can build the economy. And in many cases, that is exactly what is happening. Now, that's not to say there is not a crisis because the whole world is falling apart. And I know the Republicans want to blame Kamala Harris for that for some reason. She hasn't set policy. She doesn't control the rest of the world. There are all kinds of horrible things going on around the planet, and people are fleeing. And you would be fleeing, too. You would be trying to get into a place where at least you have a chance of making it. And if you get to that place, if you're lucky enough to actually make it there, you will work harder than anybody around you. I see this every day. I see people working their asses off. And those are the people who are struggling to fit in. And to be demeaned like this, to be referred to in such a subhuman manner, it's beneath all of us. And anyone using that phrase should be ashamed. And don't use it in my presence. That's all I have to say.
It's also really jarring because that sentiment is so anathema to what our country has branded it and branded itself as and presented as on the world stage. It's been very important for people to understand that we embrace diversity, we embrace our ideals and our acceptance of a multitude in our society, and the so-called melting pot is a point of pride in describing where you come from and why we have so many sort of areas of interest from the outside looking in and within. You know, people are better for it, and they share stories, they share their uniqueness. That is a part of the vibrance of what attracts people to big cities or just all the different places and faces and communities around this in really vast place that, as I said, has been associated with a welcoming stance and the idea that you can and the dream and the sort of lack of barriers. You know, you can be your own gatekeeper and letting people bring their dreams here to try to fulfill them.
Why do you think New York City is such an interesting place? It's because of the diversity, because of people coming from all over the world. You don't ask to see people's papers, you know, that's a formality. That's something that, you know, it's like, can I see your tax return? Can I look at your driver's record? You know, it's not the same as interacting with somebody on a human level. You know, when we go overseas to other countries, nobody asks that of us. We tell people where we are from. We have interesting conversations, but our immigration status is not something that's held up to scrutiny and suspicion. And it's a deep sickness that this has become such an issue. Again, you know, there are issues, there are problems that should be handled. There was one put forth this year that Trump somehow had the power to kill. It would have addressed a lot of this. it was both sides of the aisle supporting this until Trump said stop supporting it. It might solve the problem and take away a talking point for my campaign. And Republicans just bowed their heads and did exactly what they were told. That, to me, is much more of a threat than any immigrant has ever proven to be, because it threatens the entire future of this country. And in a week, we get to find out, or we get to start to find out just how this is going to go. But yeah, you know, it's that diversity. It's that telling of stories. It's being embraced by other cultures, learning about other cultures. That's the magic of what this country is. Remember the Statue of Liberty, you know? Remember what's inscribed on it, you know, about huddled masses and being welcome to people who have no other place to go. What happened to that? It's right there. It's still written there, you know? We have, or many of us have forgotten, completely forgotten. And, you know, I dare say, our relatives, our ancestors, they came to this country at some point. We're not Native Americans. And when they came, they probably came the very same way that many other people come these days. Just arriving. You know, not getting permission in advance, not being vetted. In fact, there was probably much less scrutiny paid to everybody who arrived from Italy, Ireland, England, you name it. All the countries that we don't have a problem with, apparently. Because if you're going to be strict about this, where are their papers? You know, where's their vetting? And in our history, of course, there was a lot of racism against almost every nation you can imagine. And personally, I thought we were past that. We're not.
Yeah, it's not veiled. It's totally, like, up front, and it's a part of this rhetoric, this sort of, like, just totally sensationalized characterizations of people. I mean, even if they're here under dubious circumstances, this society grants people sort of the benefit of the doubt in many regards, and we shouldn't be treating people with less human dignity than you would an ordinary citizen. People are in transit, and I think it just boils down to racism that is not, like I said, veiled in any way. It's just not discreetly admitted. Mm-hmm. It's given all these sort of, it's dressed up with all of this.
Well, I think,
yeah.
I think this rally proved that it is very much racism, because look at the people that were attacked. It was not the white people. Let's put it that way. White people were not attacked at all. It was the brown-skinned, black-skinned, Asian, you name it. People who are different. They were seen as a threat. And, it's just sad. It's just sad to see that play out in pretty much the way that we expected it to play out. But to his credit, Trump has denounced the remarks that were made. You know, those racist remarks were made by the comedian, and the hateful rhetoric of the evening has said that it's not anything he wants to be associated. I'm kidding. Of course, he didn't do that. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Donald Trump saying, I'm so sorry, that was wrong, let's do better? Now, today Donald Trump defended the controversial Madison Square Garden rally, telling supporters the event was an absolute love fest. An absolute love fest. Yeah, he used that word, I think, for January 6th, didn't he? My goodness. Does he not know what love is? I don't think he does. That would make a lot of sense. He also said it was my honor to be involved. Let's not forget that. He's involved. He did this. The former president's comments come amid backlash over disparaging and divisive remarks at a Sunday event in New York City. which included, as we heard, a comedian describing Puerto Rico as a floating island of garbage. Allies expressed worry the remarks could have political repercussions, especially given the fact that Puerto Ricans vote and that they are citizens. And there are 500,000 residing in Pennsylvania alone, which is a key swing state. And these remarks might not land well. Yeah. He said, I don't think anybody has ever seen anything like what happened the other night at Madison Square Garden. Well, you know what? I agree with that. That's certainly true. He said this today at Mar-a-Lago. He said, the love in that room, it was breathtaking. And you could have filled it many, many times with people that were unable to get in. He claimed the veteran politicians told him there had never been an event so beautiful. Never. They started to say, well, in 1939, the Nazis used Madison Square Garden. How terrible to say, right? Because, you know, they've used Madison Square Garden many times. Many people have used it. But nobody's ever had a crowd like that. Wait, hold on a second. What do you mean nobody's ever had a crowd like that? Every time the Rangers play, they get a crowd like that. They get more people. Every time Billy Joel played, he got more people. I know, because they cram them in. And they pay off the fire marshal so that more people get... Look, the point is, there's a finite number of people that can fit in that arena. It's just... It's terrible. It really is awful. And hopefully people wake up and see just... what they might be letting in. Now, last week, Kamala Harris appeared on Fox News. Was it last week or the week before? I think it might have been the week before. That guy, Brett Baer, is that his name? He gave her what I consider to be a gift by leading her down a road. And I just want you to listen to the way she responds to something that he says.
This is an election for president of the United States. It's not supposed to be easy.
I know, but
it's not supposed to be. It is not supposed to be a cakewalk.
So are they misguided, the 50%? Are they stupid?
Oh, God, I would never say that about the American people. And in fact, if you listen to Donald Trump, if you watch any of his rallies, he's the one who tends to demean and belittle and diminish.
Now, you heard the way she reacted to the very idea of calling people stupid, people who aren't voting for her, people who disagree with her. You know, that is genuine. That is someone saying, I would never say something like that, and I believe her. That seemed extremely sincere. And by appearing on Fox, she was able to convey that as a reaction to a leading question that... It was basically part of an attack half hour. I don't know why it was only half an hour. She could have gone 90 minutes easily. But in that half hour, I think she really held her own. And, you know, the issue that I really feel should be addressed is a lot of people still aren't sure if she's up for the job. Yeah. And that's a fair question. It's a fair point. She hasn't had the job before. She's been vice president, pretty close, but not the same thing. But contrast that to the other candidate who has had the job before, and you see what has happened as a result of that. Is that better? The possibility of somebody learning the ropes and getting more experience as they go along, like every new president has ever done, or somebody who is seen as such a danger by his own people. By his own people. You think that's a better choice? Give me a break. I mean, what is it going to take? How many people are you not going to believe? You know, he's had so many members of his cabinet speak out against electing this guy, saying he's a danger to democracy. Dick Cheney, for God's sake. I never thought I'd agree with anything Dick Cheney said, but he believes this. John Bolton. I've said horrible things about John Bolton on this show. Like him or not, sometimes you have to listen to people that you have very little in common with and just weigh everything. And if after all of that you still say, well, I don't trust Harris. Well, I don't know what you're basing that on. I don't know what exactly you are basing that on, because you hold the two up and you see somebody who has been convicted of crimes, is on trial in multiple locations by different courts who are not connected to each other. You see all these people from his past and his very recent past saying what a danger he is. I don't see that with Kamala Harris. I just do not see that. I see attempts to try and get something on her, but they're not working. I see a lot of hatred towards an African-American woman. I see people being called socialist and communist for having Democratic Party views. Now, let's look at that for a second. I would doubt strongly that people who are hurling those insults, I don't think they've ever met a socialist or a communist in their lives. Rather, they are taking any position that is an inch to the left of their own and referring to them, McCarthy style, as communist. But if you met actual communists, and there are communists in the United States, not very many of them, but there are some, you will see that their views are very, very different. In fact, many of them are not voting for Harris. They have their own view of the way things should be going, and it's very, very different. That's not the Democratic Party by any stretch of the imagination. My God. To true communists, Democrats are right-wing. That's been the case for a long time. And to condemn Europe, which I've seen done by Republicans as well, we don't want to be like Europe. Really? We don't want to be like Europe? Why exactly is that? What's so horrible about Europe? But they're treating Europe like they're the Soviet Union or something. It's just really, really bizarre and weird, and would be funny if so many people weren't buying into it. And people really do buy into this nonsense. I mean, you can't honestly believe, as the phrase was at Madison Square Garden on Sunday, that Donald Trump can fix it. He can fix anything, whatever it happens to be. Well, he didn't fix it while he was in power. We had all kinds of civil unrest, which, okay, interesting point. If the civil unrest were occurring under Biden, it would be Biden's fault. But since it was occurring under Trump, it's the fault of the communists or the radical left or Black Lives Matter or governors or mayors, anybody but the guy at the top, who would be the first person you would blame if he were a Democrat. Yeah. Gas prices are cheap. I don't care what people say. It's $2.49 a gallon around here. It's been cheap for a while. It's too cheap, if you ask me. Other parts of the world pay much more. And they waste much less. Sure, there are problems. There are economic problems. And again, they are global. They happen all over the place as a result of the pandemic and all sorts of other economic factors that I don't have a clue about. And I guarantee you, people pointing fingers at the Biden administration saying they're responsible, they don't have a clue either. Talk to economists. Talk to people who know what it is that they're talking about. You'll get differing opinions for sure, but you will not get everybody pointing the finger at one person, because that's childish and simplistic and utterly ridiculous. Now, cowardice, that's something I wanted to touch upon tonight. We are seeing it. We're starting to see it. We're starting to see how cowards are behaving as Election Day is almost upon us. We first saw it at the Los Angeles Times, where the billionaire owner refused to allow the editorial staff to endorse Kamala Harris. Now, billionaires, they tend to go with the guy who is friendly to billionaires, a billionaire himself. It's not too surprising. What's surprising and distressing is seeing them abuse their power and prevent a free press from operating. You talk about cancel culture. You talk about rights being taken away. Look no further. Look no further than Republicans and those who support them. Yeah, they believe in freedom of speech until they disagree with it. Same thing happened at the Washington Post when Jeff Bezos stepped in. Yeah, he owns the Washington Post. Did you not know that? Yeah, he owns Amazon. He owns the Washington Post. And he did not want a message of support for Kamala Harris to be printed as an endorsement. But he was able to print his own viewpoint in that paper the other day. No problem there. Yeah, he's apparently just doing what he pleases with the Washington Post. It's one of his toys right now. Well, at least one editor has resigned at the Post. High-profile Post staffers have publicly expressed their dismay. And it's really pretty disgusting to declare a moment of high principle only 11 days before the election that is just highly suspect, that it's just not to be believed. This was a matter of principle. Because that is what was officially said by Jeff Bezos, that it wasn't up to the Post to advise people how to vote. Let people make up their own minds. Yeah, it's not up to a newspaper to let people know to endorse. Since when? Well, with the Post, I think since 1988. They've been doing it every year since then. Now, it's clear what's going on here. It's clear that Jeff Bezos and the owner of the Los Angeles Times, they are worried about what could happen to them if Trump wins, as they've had run-ins with him in the past. And to take this position at this late stage is the epitome of cowardice. And it shows just how fragile democracy is. It shows how fragile our press is and why we should never allow a single billionaire or even a group of billionaires to control any part of the operations. I thought that was understood, but it's not. It's not. And so now you have a situation where this major newspaper is remaining silent at a time when it's never mattered more to speak out, to say something, to show that you believe in democracy. Hell, their slogan is democracy dies in darkness. Well, democracy died in full daylight for them.
This is the darkness.
Yeah, the darkness is upon us.
The darkness being referenced.
Wow, it sounds like
that's what it is.
Game of Thrones or Babylon 5 or something. Yeah, the darkness has arrived. The
darkness is here.
Wow. Well, may I suggest we form an army of light and move ahead and do something about this, because it's just so upsetting. It's so upsetting to see. And, you know, okay, there are people out there, Republicans now are taking the position, why should a newspaper tell people how to vote? Doesn't that make the newspaper biased? It's an editorial, for God's sake. Do you people not understand how newspapers work? Editorials are opinions. They always have been. Newspapers have always printed opinions on issues, on candidates, on everything under the sun. And now you're saying they should shut up?
Yeah, it's like, why are political cartoons so opinionated?
Oh, you can't have that anymore? No, that's biased. Oh, God. So every day it's something new, and I don't know what is ahead for us. Our local newspaper, first of all, New York Times, of course, they endorse Kamala Harris. No issues there. Newsday, they endorsed Harris as well. But, you know, there were some things that bugged me over at Newsday. Can I just go over some of them? Hang on, there's a couple. I don't know which one I want to get to first.
Yes.
Hang on. Okay, here we go.
Go on.
First Congressional District. That's the district we're in right now. Nick LaLota. They endorse Nick LaLota, the Republican incumbent. Okay, you know what? I guess maybe they didn't feel it was time for a Democrat, i.e. John Avalon, to be elected, even though this district has been headed by Democrats many times. But listen to the logic here, all right? The first congressional district is like no other on Long Island. Its diversity of landscapes includes immense expanses of pine barrens, sprawling tracts of low-lying suburbia, chains of bucolic vineyards and farmland, and breathtaking tableau of sea and sand. Okay, creative writer can sit down now. Its residents have a unique sense of place, whether one lives on the East End or in the heart of Brookhaven, on the North or South Shore, among the millionaires in the South Fork or with the laborers who work for them. Okay, you painted a good picture. Representing such a district requires a deep knowledge of its of the richness of its quirks and an appreciation for its glorious mosaic. You see where they're going here? They're basically buying into Nick LaLota's talking points that John Avalon doesn't know the area, even though he lives out east. Has for a while. And Nick LaLota doesn't even live in the district. But let's continue. Democrat John Avalon is a gifted communicator, one of the best we have seen at any level of government on Long Island. Well, that's a nice compliment, isn't it? Yeah, too bad it doesn't continue. He has deep knowledge of our nation's history and politics, and a knack for explaining complex issues. Sounds good to me. It's better than what we have now. But one issue he has not been able to explain is the matter of where he lives. And one criticism he has been unable to dispel is whether he grasps the intricacies of CD1, Congressional District 1. Okay, first of all, one issue he has not been able to explain is the matter of where he lives. He lives out east, like I just said. He's registered to vote out east for years. He has an apartment in New York City. What don't you understand? He explained it, but for some reason, that's not acceptable. But it is acceptable to have a guy who doesn't even live in the district represent the district. He can't even vote for himself. I mean, that to me seems worse. Yeah. And he's unable to dispel whether he grasped the issue of whether he can grasp the intricacies. I think, you know, he has demonstrated through debates and through all kinds of other statements that he grasped it just fine. Avalon meets the only requirement for Congress that one lives in the state they represent. Okay. He bought a house in Sag Harbor in 2017, registered to vote in Suffolk in 2020. He also has a longtime residence in Manhattan, where his family lives. He has been unable or unwilling to clearly and convincingly explain how much time he spends at each home, but at least until recently seemed to be a part-time resident of Sag Harbor. I don't know how you're reaching these conclusions, but I've never seen him be unable or unwilling to explain where he lives. He lives out east. What proof do you want exactly? Does he have to cut all ties to Manhattan? Is that the demand here? In pressing this argument, Republican Representative Nick LaLota does not come to the table with clean hands. He, too, lives outside the district. Okay, let me stop you right there, editorial. He, too, lives outside the district. You just said that John Avalon lives in the district, in Sag Harbor. You just said that. Yet, in the next paragraph, you're saying Nick LaLota also lives outside the district. Well, John Avalon does not live outside the district. He has an apartment in Manhattan. He lives in Sag Harbor. He is registered to vote there.
I wonder if that's sloppy editing.
It's sloppy everything.
Like, they had a section about that was contrary to that, and then they forgot to, like, take a transition sentence and, like, adjust it or something.
Well, no one can say that LaLota does not know the district well or appreciate its uniqueness or understand its distinct communities and their issues. Well, I can say that while he may understand them, he gets them wrong. He backs the wrong things. He's anti-abortion. these all sorts of issues that do not represent what I consider to be the majority of people here, if they only got out and voted. And I just cannot believe that Newsday would endorse somebody like that. But they did. They did. You know what else they did? Last week we talked about Proposition 1, which basically protects against unequal treatment based on ethnicity, national origin, age, disability, and sex. And Newsday said to vote no. They said to vote no on this. Yeah, on all ballots this year is the proposed Equal Rights Amendment called Proposition 1. It's being marketed as urgently needed to further protect the state's already expansive access to abortion after the Supreme Court reversed Roe v. Wade and ruled abortion laws were to be determined by each state. Yeah, it's about codifying abortion into the state constitution. Opponents of the measure are equally overwrought but correct about some of its potential excesses, according to Newsday. The amendment would not overrule any existing laws or create any new rights in the state, but it would start in motion a legal process to give the courts much more power to determine these outcomes and to resolve cultural and political fights that currently cannot get majority support in the state legislature. It is part and parcel of a parallel effort by legislative leaders to reshape New York's top court by stacking it with extremely liberal and activist judges who likely will provide favorable rulings on the litigation that's sure to follow. This sounds like a Republican. It sounds like fear-mongering about radical politics, about activist judges, about giving all sorts of people who are not here legally rights. My goodness. Adding Proposition 1 will encourage widespread challenges to existing civil rights and discrimination laws and flood the courts with litigation. The amendment, for example, and here we go, opens the door to judicial activism on contentious issues such as overriding parental control of medical decisions for minors. So you're buying right into that whole Trump-inspired narrative that you send your kid off to school and he comes back a different sex. Literally what Trump is saying. And Newsday is buying into that by telling people to vote against something that affords people equal rights in the state constitution. It's disgusting. It really is. Proposition 1 is an end run around the will of the people to have these choices made by their elected representatives. No, I don't want those choices made by Nick LaLota and his ilk. It needs to be state law in the Constitution. Disgusting. Newsday stands alone in this. Virtually every other newspaper has endorsed Proposition 1. It's widely expected to pass. Let me read you what the New York Times says. Proposition 1 will appear on all ballots throughout the state. We'll ask voters if they support a constitutional amendment protecting reproductive rights. Newsday is bent out of shape because they don't mention the word abortion. But reproductive rights, you know, kind of covers it. A yes vote would approve an amendment to the state's constitution to include protections against discrimination based on ethnicity, national origin, age, disability, sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, gender expression, pregnancy, pregnancy outcomes, reproductive health care, and autonomy. And yeah, I know those words scare people, but it's about fairness. It's about human rights. Shouldn't even have to be doing this. The measure would also protect New Yorkers from discrimination based on ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, disability status, among others. It was endorsed by the League of Women Voters, the New York Civil Liberties Union, the NAACP. It's overwhelmingly supported by 69% of likely voters. Now, who opposes this? Republicans, anti-abortion activists, are among the measure's opponents. Some point out that abortion is already legal in New York and argue that changing the Constitution isn't necessary. Others are concerned about the protections related to sexual orientation national origin and gender identity that would be enacted if the measure were to pass. To them, I say deal with it. It's real. These people exist, and they have every right to be treated fairly. The most heated attacks, get ready, have centered on the protections the amendment would offer to transgender people, particularly transgender girls, who many Republicans believe should not be allowed to play on sports teams with cisgender girls. You know, I want to know how big an issue this actually is, and not from the middle-aged white guys. I want to hear it from the schools themselves, from the players themselves, not their parents standing behind them, no. I want to hear what they have to say. Is this an issue? And if it is an issue, you're the ones that should be deciding what the fairest thing to do is. I'm sick of hearing about it from people that have no clue. Opponents of the measure have warned that the amendment would allow undocumented migrants to vote and allow children to make health care decisions without their parents' consent. Neither is true. And that's according to the New York City Bar Association. I'm not happy with newspapers this week. I really am not. I mean, Newsday really missed the boat on that one. And Washington Post, L.A. Times, it's pretty sad. You know, the other week we were at the Jets game, the Monday Night Football shellacking they got from the Buffalo Bills. After the game, remember I was waiting at the porta potty in the parking lot for quite some time. You don't remember that, Kyle? Because you know I was in the stadium for all this time, and there's just no way you can get into the bathroom in the stadium. It's just a ridiculous line. But there was also a line for the porta potty, and I happened to, you know, it was about 10 minutes, and it was torture because the guys behind me were big Buffalo Bill fans, and that didn't matter to me. It was just they were just so stupid. I mean, just with the things they were saying. Sexist, racist, misogynistic, all of that. I mean, one of them even thought somebody was taking too long in the porta potty, so they started banging on the side. It was hard to deal with that, but I kept my mouth shut and just stared straight ahead. But I realized they were talking about Jets fans and how they just can't get it through their heads that they're, you know, their team isn't that good and they should stop being crybabies about it. And I realized the hostility, the hatred between fans of one team and another, it is so similar to what I am seeing in the Trump camp when talking about anybody who is not part of them. They say the most vile things. They have an almost unlimited amount of hostility. And these are the people that you see every day. These are the people you live next door to. Where does such hatred come from? And it's weird because when it comes down to professional sports, such hatred is manufactured. You can just build it, basically, based on a game, based on a pennant race. But if you take away the teams, then people are just people. And I realize that is what politics has become. To many people, it's just this side and the other side. And the other side is the personification of evil. And, you know, while there has always been competitiveness and a degree of hostility, I suppose, it's never been quite like this. So that's something I basically just happened to notice while waiting in line at a porta potty, which you wouldn't think that would be a moment of revelation. Well, tonight we have Kamala Harris. We'll be speaking at the Ellipse. If you recall, the Ellipse is where the famous January 6th speech of Donald Trump's took place prior to the riot. 50,000 people are expected tonight. 50,000 people. Now, that never seems to be mentioned when Trump is basically pointing to his crowd size as a matter of honor or proof that he is much further ahead. And it's not about crowd size regardless. It's about listening. It's about It's about the issues, understanding the issues, having debates, having press conferences, having rallies, all the stuff that we used to do without thinking about it. In this 1 week left, I just hope that some civility is able to exist and get us to the finish line. And when we get to that finish line, that's going to be just about a week from tonight. It's going to be a moment. It's going to be more than a moment. It's going to be something we all have to deal with one way or another. We'd like your opinion, your feelings on this. otw@2600.com is our email address. And by the way, you're listening to this radio program over WUSB in Stony Brook. And WUSB is in the middle of a fund drive, because that's how we survive. Yeah, you know, some people think that radio is irrelevant. I don't think it is at all. I think radio has never been more relevant. You cannot turn on a playlist or a podcast and just hear from a variety of live people. That is, people who are in the studio or broadcasting live around the clock. You don't get that. A radio station, you do. And we are lucky here at Stony Brook to have this radio station. So please, go to WUSB.FM. Be generous. Pledge whatever you can afford. If you agree or disagree with anything you've heard in the last hour, hey, at least you're thinking. At least you're engaged. How many places offer you that opportunity? Coming up, we'll have more of the same. And more that's different. Because that is what a radio station that has over 100 people working for it will bring you. All right. That's going to do it for us tonight. We'll see you next week. Fingers crossed for an outcome that we can all live with. And unfortunately, I started playing the theme or the outro last at the beginning of the show. So those of you who are paying attention might know what it is, but I don't think there's ever been a more appropriate song written than Elvis Costello's Night Rally. It's what we saw the other night. Hopefully for the last time. Good night. I would stand there for assistance, but the soul on the signal wire and the corporation logo is flashing on. I don't wanna look. There's
listening to the Struggle Session on WUSB Stony Brook. Marxism-Leninism in the 21st Century, baby.